Welcome to VPG's Virtual Water Cooler Chat Podcast, a platform that celebrates the rich tapestry of professional diversity, with a particular emphasis on empowering women. We aim to foster diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA, for all, while recognizing and championing the achievements of everyone as a central pillar of our journey. In our conversations, we explore a wide spectrum of backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives, creating a vibrant mosaic that enriches our collective understanding and strengthens our commitment to diversity and empowerment. Today, we have the pleasure of chatting with Dr. Sam, Dr. Samantha Ray Dickinson, also known as Dr. Sam. She is the leading DEI strategist and CEO of DSRD Consulting. She's also the creator of the innovative app DEI Offload, designed specifically to support the mental health of individuals working in the DEI sector, and her program, DEI Blueprint, designed to provide strategy development support to DEI and HR professionals. With over a decade of experience, Dr. Sam has brought transformative DEI solutions to organizations like Goodwill, Save the Children, and NIH, impacting over 10,000 employees. Her work also extends to the academic sector, where she's worked with leaders from over 50 universities across the nation to embed DEI into their processes. Dr. Sam holds a bachelor's in biology, a master's in public health, and a doctorate in leadership and organizational management. Dr. Sam's work intersects between DEI and business systems optimization and development. In the past 2 years, Dr. Sam has elevated her company's global presence, forging partnerships with change agents in more than 50 corporations, including AWS, Meta, Lyft, Intel, Microsoft, and Zoom, to improve their workplace culture. She's also supported over 500 DEI practitioners worldwide. A highly sought-after speaker, Dr. Sam shares her expertise on global stages and in prestigious publications such as Forbes and Fortune. Her passion is deeply rooted in leveraging her experiences to cultivate more inclusive and equitable environments, making her a distinguished voice in the field of DEI.
Hello, Dr. Sam. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here with you.
Thank you so much for accepting my invitation to be on Virtual Water Cooler Chat. I've known you when we did the Unconscious Biases workshop, where Jess Marks was the interviewer, and I really specifically enjoy the portion where you gave us the life quiz. So that was really how I remember you. Just very authentic. And I was like, oh, you know, I need to invite her to do a virtual water cooler chat. So thank you.
Of course. It feels like so long ago.
It feels like so long ago. Oh my God. So can you take a couple of minutes to tell your story and what makes you you and why are you Dr. Sam?
Why am I Dr. Sam? A lot of life experiences. I can tell you how I got into the diversity, equity, and inclusion space and why I decided to be in this field. So my background is very like non-linear. I was in biomedical sciences. I used to do a lot of research on hypertension, actually. And I did start to focus on the prevalence of hypertension in the Black community. And I was doing the research because, I'm interested in research, but that was to kind of like beef up my resume to go to med school, because you know, you have to be like doing a lot of different things to show that you have different skill sets and you're not just going to med school just to go to med school.
Well-rounded?
Yes, yes. And I was doing a lot of things in undergrad. I don't know how I survived, but literally my last semester, right before I graduated undergrad, I was thinking critically about what I wanted to do for real, for real. And one of my colleagues that was in the program that I was in a research program for minority students, and she was doing public health research, and it was very human focus and change focus. And I thought that was the most interesting thing because I had never had any experience to like biomedical sciences type of research. And I was a little bit interested, but I never really did anything about it. I told my physics professor that I don't think I wanted to go to med school anymore. It just wasn't resonating with me like it did when I was a little girl. And I told her I wanted to be able to change systems. I wanted to be an OBGYN and I wanted to help underrepresented and under-resourced young women. And I felt like, okay, I can provide this care to the people in need, but if their environments aren't changing, they're going to go back into an environment that's not conducive to their success. And they may end up back in the same situations that they were in. And so I wanted to effect change on a more systemic level instead of just kind of fixing people up and providing care in that way. And so I told my physics professor that, Dr. Tennille Presley, and she brought up public health to me. And she explained to me, like, there's different concentrations and focus areas in public health. And I was like, I've never heard of this ever. So I did some research and I found out about community and maternal health. And I was like, this directly aligns with my passion for like helping pregnant people. So I applied literally my last semester of undergrad. I just randomly applied to a bunch of schools that had those programs and I got in and I went to get my master's in public health. And through that master's program, it opened up the floodgates for DEI for me. It was mainly health equity. And I just learned a lot about behavioral change and the change management process and how equity really is important for not just people who are marginalized, but for everybody. Like everyone needs equitable access to resources so that they can live a healthy life and have healthy life outcomes. And so I got my master's and I took another left turn and went into accreditation. And so for a while I worked to accredit public health schools and programs across North America. And in that role, I got even more introduced into DEI specifically because I worked to help develop cultural competency accreditation standards and also worked with the heads of the programs and the schools to make sure that their research endeavors, their hiring practices, and their retention practices and how they interact with their student population was diverse, equitable, and inclusive. And through that role, I learned about like climate assessments, which is what we in the DEI space call like DEI audits. So that kind of gave me the foot in the door to really get deep into DEI. And in the midst of that role, I started my doctoral program and I did my research on creating equitable and safe spaces for Black women in the workplace and using a lens of intersectionality. That propelled me even more in terms of like my foundational understanding, my historical understanding, my theoretical understanding of this work. And then after that is when I fully transitioned into DEI. So I started consulting. I worked at the NIH. I worked at Goodwill. And after that, I transitioned to open up my consulting firm. With that, I decided to focus on helping other people in the DEI space because in working in DEI, I realized that there were, I don't want to say there weren't any resources, but there are not many resources. There's not a lack of centralization in the space. And so if you enter into DEI, now it's getting better. But if you enter into DEI, you kind of have to like learn as you go and make connections and lean on your network to help you learn best practices and basically how to do your job outside of like the theoretical and historical knowledge that I believe people should have, the best practices piece. So like, what does a DEI strategy actually look like? And some people call them DEI programs. What does that actually look like? What are the processes to creating a program? What is everyone doing and what have they seen be successful? That kind of thing. And so I decided to focus on that space of DEI because it was a huge gap. I was one of the people who needed a lot of help and it was very hard in the beginning. I had to reach out to a bunch of people on LinkedIn and hope that they had time to meet with me and try to figure out how to format a DEI strategy. I knew the processes, but I didn't know how to put it all together. I didn't know how to like put it in a framework and present it. And so that was the beginning of my career. And then I figured it out, obviously. And once I figured it out, I did it again and again and again. And that created my framework, which is what I teach other DEI practitioners. And that is the birth of my program, DEI Blueprint. And before I went full-time with my consulting firm, I did a qualitative study with over 280 DEI practitioners across the world to assess further gaps in the space. And everything that I felt, a lot of people felt as well. So the need for targeted and specific mental health resources for people that do this type of work, because the work is very layered and nuanced. That was missing, lack of information in terms of like compensation and best practices and just professional development. That was also missing. And so that caused the birth of my app, DEI Offload. And that's like the community portion of providing a space for people in the DEI and HR spaces. That platform, that app houses DEI Blueprint, and it's called DEI Offload. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing the last 12 years.
Wow. Why do you decide to choose the path of becoming an entrepreneur, starting your own consulting firm versus working for someone else?
Yeah, great question. To be honest, the autonomy and flexibility, like I have the ability to work with multiple different organizations, with different people, and I also can push the work forward in that capacity. There is a common debate in the DEI space if you're more effective being internal or external. Some people think that external consultants are more effective because the companies are actively and intentionally hiring that person. And there's a set time limit. There's a set amount of money being spent. And so it's more top of mind for companies. But when they hire someone internally, they just kind of see them as another employee. And then the work doesn't move forward as quickly. I don't know if one or the other is better. I think there are pros and cons to both sides. But for me personally, the flexibility and autonomy. So to be able to work on whatever I wanted to work on and to be able to say the things that I wanted to say, create the types of graphics I wanted to create, and not have to get pushback from people saying, oh, this is not a priority right now, even though that was what I was hired to do. So just more flexibility and autonomy. And I didn't know it then, but I'm autistic. I'm late diagnosed. I was diagnosed like the very end of 2022, I was diagnosed with autism. And now that I know more about how it shows up for me and the accommodations I need, a lot of autistic folks become entrepreneurs because that flexibility, like I can provide accommodations for myself. I don't have to wait for an organization to implement those accommodations, like flexible working hours. So I can determine when I wake up and when I work and when I go to sleep. I work better at night. Most companies don't offer that type of flexibility. Bright lights are very, my eyes are very sensitive to bright lighting, loud noises, that kind of thing. I can work from home. I can work wherever I want to work and create that safe working environment for myself. So all of those things.
But the reason why I asked you that great question is because I actually was in patent litigation for over two decades. I didn't actually have a lot of work-life balance because I didn't think that I seek it myself. I was I'm a recovering people pleaser. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any boundaries. So when my dad passed in 2017, I continued to work because that is the easiest thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I make good money. You know, so I'm like, I could just go on travel, do my thing. Didn't really have to think about, not necessarily work-life balance, but what makes my life fulfilling? Mm-hmm. What gives meaning to my life, right? Yeah, you could travel, but that's only temporary. You have to go back to reality at some point.
Yeah.
So otherwise it will become really, really expensive. So I think it's like the work-life integration. That part of it, I didn't see. For me, I didn't know how to integrate it. Mm-hmm. Because even when I said no, it's not always respected.
Yeah.
You know, some people can always get away with a no, but I cannot.
Yeah.
So I ended up deciding that, you know, I already know how to do my job. Maybe I'll come out and become an entrepreneur. Now, day year one, I did not have high expectations. Because I already know, it's like, you know, I need work-life balance integration. So I just need to figure out how to work the least amount and make enough money to sustain my lifestyle. And the rest of it, you can figure it out. And it's just like what you said. I really like what when you said it, it's like, well, we didn't know how to do this. You didn't know how to do this, but eventually you kind of figure out because we're intelligent women. And you know, we have, you know, our education. I had a master's degree. So a lot of this you can just figure it out. Maria Fall Oreo has the work is that everything is figureable or something like that. So year one is so different from year four now. Every day it's a different challenge. It's like you have a team, it's like you want to help them grow, but at the same time, it's like, how much do you, especially balancing that people-pleasing tendency, and then how much do I want it to be like I need them to work? So do I need to say yes to the things that they want me to say yes to? Where do I strike the balance? I think that is so hard.
So I don't have a team. I used to have an executive assistant. She was amazing. But that same work-life balance that you're talking about, I had to make a very difficult decision and take an extended time of leave last year. And so I significantly scaled down everything. And at the beginning of last year, I was actually on path to scale up. And you know, it's interesting. People would probably be like, why would you do that with all the things happening in DEI? But I believe that this is the prime time to continue to work hard in the DEI space and not work hard. I mean, like push forward and continue doing the work you've been doing. But anyways, because of personal reasons, I had to take a step back and I went on a very long sabbatical. And it's for the same reason you said, like, as I was scaling and hiring people, you enter into this cycle of you kind of have to work harder to be able to pay the people so that they can shoulder some of the responsibilities for you. You also have to invest time into making sure that they feel comfortable doing their role, that they have support that you can pour into them. So there's a lot of ways you're being pulled as the head of a company while you still have to like live your life and make sure that you're getting the rest that you need. And so it is a very difficult balance to be had. I think it goes back to people's ultimate like goal. Like, what is it? Do you want to scale? Because if you want to scale, that's just what comes with the territory. If you don't have funding, if you're not VC backed, you're gonna have to spend a lot of your own time and money to scale. And eventually you will get a high ROI. Eventually you will have a team of people who you trust who can kind of help you carry the company so you're not doing it alone. But in the beginning, the first 5 years, I believe, it requires a lot of time investment, money investment. Your mental health might start to falter a little bit. But that's just if you want to scale. People can, they choose to be solopreneurs where it's just them. And that's okay. It depends on what you want. So that's my thoughts on finding a healthy work-life balance. I do think it's possible. Is it easy? No. Is it possible? Yes. But you have to kind of reframe your mind to align with what you really want. If you really want rest and ease, you can't work as hard. Business owners have been pushing, like, oh, you can make 10K a month. I don't know where 10K came from, but that was the number that people kept pushing. You won't make that if you want to center ease, unless you do a lot of work up front for a certain amount of time. The ease and rest doesn't come automatically. Take it from me. I've done a lot of work in the last 2.5 years, almost 3 years, and now I'm burnt out. So It's just about finding a balance and figuring out what it is your goals are and what it is you want to accomplish long term, not just in the current moment.
Thank you for sharing that. I was very resistant about scaling because to me, scaling means that I would have to be like out there hustling, getting clients, dealing with more people. I'm like, do I really want that? I just want to go on vacation. That's really what I want. Since my dad passed, my mom is sort of like my responsibility because she doesn't drive. She's a really awesome person, but there's a lot of cultural baggages that she has. And a lot of it, since she's lived with me, then I have to have a daily dose and interaction of that. And sometimes that actually affects my own mental space.
Yeah.
Like the cultural stereotypes, like for example, she has hard time being or seeing me on social media, or she has hard time recognizing the fact that I am a CEO of a company. I'm Chinese American. So a lot of times, especially now, social media is it's important, but it is not great for mental health. But as a CEO and a founder of a firm, I don't need to have I don't need to be a millionaire. I don't need to be a billionaire or anything like that. I'm not trying to be the next Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, or, even Sarah Blakely. But I think sometimes when we become an entrepreneur, there's a sort of a judgment out there. The people are like, oh, why would you not want to scale? Well, because I value my sanity. It was like, you guys go do what your thing. I mean, I had actually people ask me, do you want to have can I invest in your company? I'm like, no. Well, I would say no. Because whatever I say goes. Right? I mean, it sounds very egocentric, but that's the reason why I become an entrepreneur. Because I want my freedom. I want my autonomy. It sounds like that is something. And I don't care if you want to judge me. Go ahead and judge. But coming to this particular space, that go ahead and judge, the fact that I just verbalize it, it was a long, long struggle.
Yeah. Something that I've noticed is being an entrepreneur, it teaches you a lot about yourself. It teaches you a lot about the areas in which you have to grow, the things that you need to process and deal with and let go of. So, and that's what it sounds like. You've had a journey of learning. Yeah. The thing is, my therapist told me a long time ago, it's not about setting boundaries. It's enforcing them. So you can say these are your boundaries all you want, but if people cross them and you let them, then there's no point in having boundaries. So I think that's one of the biggest things that I've had to learn, and also prioritizing and centering your needs as well. So if something doesn't align with your values and what you want to do, you don't have to do them. That's the point of being an entrepreneur. You don't have to do them, and you shouldn't feel pressured to do them, because you should be honoring yourself. At least that's the point of, if you're not going to honor yourself, then you could just go back to a 9-to-5.
Yeah, I mean, and I have that option. And the thing is, for my company, a lot of it is that I don't necessarily make the money. My business is actually, I'm a PTAP, filer. Mm-hmm. So I support only licensed practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a paralegal. Used to be a case manager for over two decades and things. So I know how to do the work, but it's a very fine line, especially as a minority business owner, Asian woman, and working primarily to support patent attorneys. That's my space, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I actually will get my business. That's how I pay people and support people. But at the same time, it's I can scale and I can take on everything else, but where would that leave Ashley?
Yeah.
And I honestly, I think the chat today, it's focused on DEI and mental health. And I think part of it is that before I would just be like, where would that leave actually? But the other part of it is that, like you, I'm not sure that I really want to scale. So I was very resistant, like I said earlier. So I'm like, I don't even want to hire people because I've managed people before. And I don't like the word manage people.
Yeah.
But I was a manager versus a leader. And
yeah.
Where do you, like, how do you lead and inspire people? And I'm like, I don't know, I have such a noble goal. I just want to pay my bills and go on vacation again. And then, but, so the turning point was last summer. I always have, like, you know, different freelancers, and I don't have any full-time employee. And I actually enjoyed that part of it. And I didn't even think, I don't think I gave myself too much credit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I just, you know, have a group of freelancers. But at the same time, so my vision was very different when I first started from
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that there was a really big struggle because I went from two Gen Zers for one part of my business that is not on, like, filing,
mm-hmm.
from two to like six over
oh,
the summer.
Yeah.
I was like, what did I do? Why am I doing this? Because you're dealing with the different values.
Yeah.
Good people. You know, they're very good people, but they have not necessarily been exposed to the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of attitude or behavior, not attitude, behaviors that are so different, and our value system is so different.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like my really huge struggle. And then I was like, oh my God, I didn't think that I could do this. Why am I like making that decision? But then, like you said, I kind of take it back. And one of the reasons why I don't take on so many cases, it's because I know myself. I take things personally.
Mm.
That's just how I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on improving and growing from that. But when I take things personally, my mental space is so much more clutter. And
yeah.
I found myself wanted to complain to my team. And I don't want to do that. I can complain, but I just wanted to be much more at ease. And
yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why, like, I would promote everything else, but you won't see me going to look for business because I already know that having space is a high stress place. There's
yeah.
only certain people. I only accept clients that are through word of mouth or people that I have previous experience with.
Yeah.
You know, and if people are disrespectful to me, this is like, sorry, I don't have time. You know, that autonomy is not something that I used to have.
Yeah.
So that's how I sort of like protect my mental space. And that boundaries, like you said, is like, is not only having a boundaries, enforcement is usually a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to share. Now, DSRD is that Dr. Samantha Ray Dickinson Consulting?
Yes.
I'm just trying to figure it out. It's like, oh, I know her for a long time, but what does DSRD until you stare something at, you know, right there? And it's like, so that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. If you had to use three words to describe yourself, what three words would you choose? And do you think your friends would agree with you?
I was going to make a joke, a corny joke. I was going to.
Of course. I like jokes.
The first word I think would be intelligent. Out of my friend group and like my family, I'm the one that people always ask all the thought-provoking questions to. So I would say that word. I don't like to use this word resilient because I don't want to always be resilient. I don't want to have to navigate trial after trial after trial, but I will say resilient. I've made it through a lot of things in my little amount of time on this earth. And the other word I would say is, this is not a word, but it's more of like a description. So I've been told a lot that I see people for who they are. Like I create a safe space for people to just show up as themselves. And it's like I can understand people even when they don't know how to verbalize or communicate how they're feeling. And I think I really like that quality about myself because I know how hard it is for me sometimes to communicate how I feel because I just have so many thoughts all the time. And so being able to provide a space for people to do that safely, I like that about myself. So I would say those three things.
And your friends would agree with you, you think?
I think so. They're the ones who told me these things.
I like it. I think part of it is because you come across as very non-judgmental.
Hmm.
Even when you say, ooh. I mean, I come from a very judgmental space. So, you know, from the culture to mm-hmm. the high stress, you know, when you're in a multi-million dollar litigation and it's like, people are going to judge you.
Yeah. I understand. I am Jamaican. So I think there's some similar cultural things there.
One of my friends is also Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, she told me that, you know, my great-grandmother is like Chinese from Hong Kong. I was like, what? I could not see the Chinese in you. Mm-hmm. But then now it's like, maybe I look at you, I have to look at you differently now, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also interviewed Mike Binns a couple of weeks ago. And he is the head of patent and trade secrets of Meta.
Oh, okay.
And he's also Jamaican.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yes. And then his great-grandfather is also Chinese from Hong Kong. It's like, is there like a vibration pattern there?
It is, actually. It is people from India and
China.
All over Asia, actually.
Ooh.
But a lot of Chinese folks were brought over as indentured servants to Jamaica during slavery. So that's why. And then shortly, like once... I don't know the specifics of the timing, but eventually those indentured servants brought their family and their like as generations continued, more people started to migrate over. So yes, Jamaica has a lot of Chinese folks, people from India, and there are some European, Irish people also.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Of course, I have to ask Dr. Sam the thought-provoking question. And then I was like very curious, but I haven't had the time to research. Now I have an answer. Thank you. Learn something new. In high-stress STEM careers,
mm-hmm.
if people were tasked with addressing mental health in a talk, what are the two crucial messages that you think that you would convey?
So in a high stress work environment, what are two messages that I would share to help people prioritize their mental health?
Yes. Thank you for rephrasing that.
The first one that came to mind just now is having a support system and building community. I currently am in a phase of rebuilding my sense of community and strengthening my support system because the systems that we currently live in kind of promote individualism and it forces us to be very isolated. So, you know, the quote unquote American dream is that you form a nuclear family, you get married, you get a dog, you have a kid, and that's just who you're around. You kind of like, you leave your parents. You don't really talk to your friends as much. And that creates like individualism and it separates us from community. We need community to thrive, honestly, to have healthy mental health or be healthy in a mental way, mental and emotional. And yeah, we can't do life by ourselves, especially with all the things going on around the world currently. So I would say that try to build community and strengthen your support system. And then the second one is creating boundaries and enforcing them. Like that just is the pinnacle of the rest of everything else. So once you determine what your values are, how you want to feel, the types of relationships you want to have, you set boundaries related to those things and you enforce them, because that then attracts the people that align with those values. It also protects you from burning out, from doing things that you don't want to do. And it also allows you to honor yourself. So it sounds simple, but we all know it's always not that easy, especially if you are a recovering people pleaser or a perfectionist or a high achiever. You always want to do all the things.
All the above.
Yeah, I can relate. So I would say those two things.
Does your DEI strategy shift when working with companies that are allocating budgets for DEI and accessibility, and especially when their budgets are dwindling down? How would you handle that?
So if a company's budget is decreasing for DEI and accessibility, I try to tell companies that they should not decrease that budget. That should be a very important line item in their budget, because the demographic landscape is changing. We can't control that. We cannot prevent it. And so you want to be able to create an environment where all these new folks entering the workforce with different intersecting identities from different backgrounds, different generations, can come to work and feel safe and can be successful in their role. And if you aren't centering DEI and providing accommodations, then you won't get those type of people. And then your business will be stagnant. So I try to tell people that should not be the line item that you reduce. And if they are forced to reduce their line item, I tell people to focus on those who need the most level of support and access to resources and professional development. Because, I mean, that's how your strategy should be centered anyways, or structured anyways. But I'd help them prioritize the things that need immediate attention and that will create a strong foundation that promotes inclusivity and equity in the workplace. So if you have a big budget, you can capture all the aspects of DEI. If your budget is smaller, you focus on the top three things that will help you maintain equity and inclusion and provide accommodations for those who need it the most. So that's how I would go about that.
I love it. Final question. What would be two pieces of advice you offer to your younger self?
Ooh, I always like, I only have two, I have a lot.
But if you want your 15 minutes back, we will get close to two.
Yeah, I can do two. The first one that came to mind just now would be, you are perfect the way you are. You do not have to overwork to prove your worth. And the second one would be, you're not defined by the things that you do. You're not defined by your work. You're not defined by all of your accomplishments. And I'll leave it there. I can go on and on about those two things, but I would say those two things because they have impacted me the most. They allow me to accomplish a lot in a short amount of time, but I didn't have to. There's no rush. Like, I have all my life. So yeah, I would say those two things.
I really love those. Those are very important because especially, I think our younger generation really needs a lot of help because they enter the workforce when it's actually the most, like, I think there's like COVID obviously creates so much chaos in the mix. They haven't had the opportunity to learn to socialize in the workplace the way that other people usually have. So one thing that I really do want to give them, like at least my team, like, you know, you help one person at a time when you're like a small business. But I think the impact of just making one person feel that they are not alone, it goes back to your community, the sense of community is so important. So with that, if our audience would like to connect with you, social media-wise, how do they connect with you?
Yes, on social media, on Instagram, my handle is at DSRD Consulting, and on LinkedIn, Dr. Samantha Ray, I think. And then on my website, dsrdconsulting.com. If you go to the contact tab and fill out that form, I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Go do something nice for yourself and have a wonderful rest of the day. And I really want to thank you for accepting to be on this virtual water cooler chat.
Thank you so much, Ashley. It's been a pleasure, as always.